Hi, I'm David Kaplan, and you're listening to the Sports Talk Live podcast. Enjoy the show. Ladies and gentlemen, baseball is almost back, baby. For the Cubs, the question isn't whether they'll play October baseball. It's how long they'll be playing in October. Sure seems that way. What does Joe Maddon's squad need to do to return to the Fall Classic and win a second title in just 3 years? Our new Cubs analyst, Doug Glanville, joins us to discuss. As for the White Sox, year two of the rebuild, when might we see the big prospects like Kopech and Jimenez in the major leagues? And what players will be dealt before the deadline as the Southsiders continue to reload for the future? And the future is now for Loyola. Cinderella embarks on its trip to San Antonio and an improbable appearance in the Final Four. So when will midnight strike for the Ramblers, if it strikes at all? And should we expect more deep tournament runs in the future? And welcome in to Sports Talk Live, presented by the Chevy Silverado. Hope you had a really good day. I'm David Kaplan. Panel for today's show from Bleacher Report, the Big Ten Unleashed?
Unfiltered.
Unfiltered. It is Seth Gruen from 670 The Score, David Schuster. And joining us to talk some Loyola and college basketball from USA Today and an Illinois State alum. Sorry you guys didn't get there. He's Scott Gleason. All right, let's get started with Loyola and Michigan. Loyola has arrived in San Antonio. They got a police escort to the airport today and police escort to their hotel. This is one of the cooler stories I've seen as a former college coach that was at the mid-major level to see a team like this make this kind of run. What does it mean?
I think it just kind of speaks to the volume of this is a Cinderella, but it's not an average Cinderella. And I think people are looking at Loyola because they have a number 11 seed and you're saying, okay, this is the underdog. This is a really impressive team. You talk to any of the coaches who have played them. You talk to, you know, Coach John Boeheline. They know that this is a real team here. And I think the way that they spread the floor, they do so many things well when you're looking at a college basketball program. And really, the explosive offense is so hard to stop because you have different guys. You've had four different guys now who have been the hero of the game, right? And so you don't necessarily have a weak spot on the whole team from an offensive standpoint. And you can't forget that this is a top five defensive team. I mean, they're so quick when it comes to ball pick defense, when it comes to switching screens. And so when you're talking about mid-major Cinderella, this is a giant killer from all perspectives, but also a team that can cut down the nets in April, not just in March.
A couple things from my standpoint. First of all, you know I'm a basketball junkie, so I love every second of this. But I'm also a basketball person who likes the game played the right way. This team plays it the right way.
No question about it.
Now, I didn't watch every game for Loyola this season, but I watched them through the conference tournament and then, of course, you know, so far through the NCAA. They just play the game right. They're so unselfish. You could tell these guys really like each other, and, of course, winning has a lot to do with that as well. But they like each other. They play well with each other. They're unselfish. They're well-coached. And I think even the extra beauty, and Chicago is more so a pro city than a college town, but there's a lot of people who have jumped on this bandwagon. And there's people who I know are not even sports fans at all who are psyched up about what Loyola's doing right now. So I think it's just a great story.
Well, Chicago will definitely back a winner. I think Porter Moser said it best when he was asked if Chicago was a sports town. But I'll continue to wax philosophical as you guys have. And that I think that this team sort of represents what we want college basketball to be. The incredible balance. The way they spread the floor. The way they play hard on both ends. We're so used to seeing the one and done come in, go win a national championship, treat college basketball like it's a glorified health club, and go to the NBA. Now, I don't blame them for doing that. That's what the rule states they have to do. But nonetheless, I think this is what we're looking for in a college basketball team and in a national champion. And moreover, I think they're playing for the mid-major. I really hope that the committee takes a hard look at other mid-majors because people forget. When they were looking at this Loyola team, many said that if they didn't win the MVC, they wouldn't have gotten in. Think about that. I think that this team certainly has the talent to get in. And I'll use this comparison. If Duke had played a schedule full of Division III teams, they'd still be Duke with all that talent. Well, I think to a lesser degree, some of these mid-majors fit into that category because there's talent on that roster. I don't care what their schedule was. I don't care who they played. That is still a good basketball team.
Yeah, I look at I had their game Loyola at Illinois State. They hadn't won in 10 years there.
Yeah.
They beat them. I had their game when their last loss I had at Bradley. And it was a game they should have won. They got screwed on a bad call and no goaltend call late. But this team was Cinderella before they – Porter said yesterday, we were Cinderella before we won a game. He goes, Cinderella usually – oh, wow, they're in the Sweet 16. He goes, before we beat Miami, every talking head's going, oh, they're going to beat Miami. They've responded to pressure.
Yeah, and I think the thing you have to look at here is that this is 7 years in the making. Moser, what he's done is he's built culture, okay? And so – we talked about this a little bit earlier.
He's built a program.
He has seven guys on that team that have won state championships in high school. So he recruited winners. It's by design, these guys that he's gotten there. And so it's taken a little bit of time, but he's really built a program from a grassroots standpoint to get to this point to where, like you said, when you see it in the middle of season, the Cinderella making was already there. So it's just a matter of kind of putting it together. And then the tournament's all about matchups. They're a hard matchup for just about every team in the NCAA tournament.
So the million-dollar question, pun intended, is he going to stick around? I mean, because obviously there's going to be a lot of programs, although jobs have already started being filled here over the last couple of days. But if there was a job opening at a more prestigious...
With the scandal brewing from the FBI, you would think there'll be some big jobs that might open.
Very possibly.
But are they the right jobs? You know, Shaka Smart waited at VCU for the Texas job. You alluded to it in the green room. Does he pull in Andy Enfield? I don't think so. I think Loyola has the money to bump him into the seven figures, which is what they're going to have to do to keep him.
Okay, but you've got Xavier's open. I think they're going to promote from within. And their assistant's been there 7 years, and he's kind of been told, you're our guy. Now, Porter's a hot name. I get it. But there's a big difference being, he's at 436 right now. That's what Porter makes. Mm-hmm. Let's say that Loyola says, we'll go to $1 million with you. Let's not forget Greg Marshall, who was in the Valley, mm-hmm. and then they left. He's making three.
I thought it was closer to four.
Yeah, it's almost to four. 3 point whatever. They charter everything out of there. This is a major financial step up
if
you want to keep this guy and then build on this.
Look,
Danny Hurley just got $3 million a year to go to Connecticut.
And look, there's going to come a time where he's going to have to go for that big contract. That's transformational wealth you're talking about. But Loyola's got a substantial alumni base. I mean, this could be, in essence, privately funded. The university doesn't necessarily have to pony up as much. You could convince an alum.
By the way, here's our Ankin Law Sports Talk Live poll question. Go to NBCSportsChicago.com/vote. What local school will be the next to appear in the Final Four? Loyola, again, Illinois, Northwestern, or other? And how sad is it that Schuster and I are older than you guys?
Wait, who's the other? Oh, the other is DePaul. Who else are we talking?
Could be UIC.
UIC?
Chicago
sure.
State.
Chicago State.
Illinois State, I guess you could call. Northern Illinois. I mean, but he and I are older than you guys. We remember when DePaul was bigger than the Bulls.
Oh, my God,
they
yeah.
sold out every game at the Allstate Arena, which was then the Rosemont Horizon, 17,000 a night. I don't care if it's Old Dominion or Notre Dame. Every game was sold out, and now this team is a travesty.
Number one seed 2 years in a row.
Right.
Unfortunately upset both times. DePaul was huge once upon a time. All the players, Aguirre, and then it went into the next generation even after him. Dallas Comegys and everybody else.
91 or 92, there were more players from DePaul playing in the NBA than any other school.
It's incredible. It's incredible.
Tell that to young people that ain't. They're like, what?
It to me is incredible how far that program has fallen.
Right.
I think they need a major overhaul in terms of administration. I think that the athletic director has long overstayed her welcome, and I don't think she could be permitted to make another hire, in my opinion. I'd be remiss if I didn't say my own school was hurting. Illinois has been terrible. I think they unceremoniously fired Bruce Weber. Look, that was the old administration. I believe in Brad Underwood, but they have a far way to go to get back to, you know, where they were under Bruce Weber, and that was in a national championship.
And I'm wondering how this is playing on DePaul's campus, where...
Not well.
Little brother well is in the Final Four? Are you kidding us? But, look, Jeannie, the hires haven't worked out, obviously. Mm-hmm. Wainwright, Albert Purnell was a bad hire. I love Dave Lato, but second go-around, I wasn't big on bringing the same guy back who said, yeah, I'm leaving you for that. Oh, now I'm fired from there. I'm going to come back to you. I understood why people were disappointed in that. But there's a level of commitment that has to be made. Chartering in the Big East. You're playing Villanova. You're playing all these great schools. Yeah. Hey, man, you better be ready to step up.
Step up to the plate. I got a question for Scott or everybody else. You mentioned that Porter has, you know, built a certain culture with certain kind of players, players that are not going to be one and dones in essence.
Sure.
However, if there was a five-star McDonald's American, you know, that was made available and wanted to come to DePaul, or excuse me, Loyola, well, DePaul, they take him in a second, of course. Loyola, would he take that kind of player?
I mean, here's the thing. I think when you think about the ripple effect.
Yeah, I think so too, but I had to ask
they
the
got
question
a short answer, yes. Force.
Okay. Yeah.
When you think about the ripple effects here, I went out on Sunday to the welcoming party, and so what I wanted to do is I wanted to interview the fans who were sort of bandwagon jumping on. And one of these fans basically said, look, like, this is what starts the fandom here. I'm a fan immediately now because of this Final Four run. So all of a sudden now you're getting a lot more fans. Boosters are going to become a lot more heavily involved. And then the recruiting standpoint, to what you're alluding to, I mean, if I'm a recruit in Chicago and I see Loyola, I mean, there's something about the way that they play from an integrity, a character standpoint. And they just have this swagger that if I'm a recruit, I'm considering Loyola all of a sudden. So I think you really kind of have to think about it from the big picture standpoint. This isn't just 2018 Cinderella run. This is, you know, building a program, and that's what Moser's all about. So I think he's going to stay. I really do. From a money standpoint, that's another side of it. But I think he's going to stay, and I think this program is going to be on the rise. We were just doing the preseason top 25, gearing up for next season. I think they're in the top 25 preseason. You're going to lose some guys.
Well, they get Crutwood back. They get their player of the year back in Custer. You know, they lose a couple of big pieces.
They lose Ingram.
Ben Richardson. I mean, those are big pieces. But they've got some talent that's either sitting out or coming in.
They've got guys ready to step up into larger roles. And that's, you know, it's cyclical. You build programs where you have guys that are sophomores, juniors, that are ready to step up and be huge as seniors. And I think that's what we're seeing.
So here's the question. Can they beat Michigan?
I believe they can. I think when you look at these two teams, what's interesting to me is they're very, very similar in the way they play. Both really good defensively. Michigan likes to spread the floor, just like Loyola. I think the big Achilles heel for the Wolverines is they struggle to close games because they can't hit free throws. And what we've seen throughout this tournament is Loyola is very, very good at the end of games. So I absolutely believe it can happen, and I believe it's going to be a close game.
Well, first of all, the two teams that are riding the wave right now, that's the beauty of this game particularly. What is it, a 25-game win streak between the two teams, 13 and 12? So, you know, these are two teams who think they're going to win the game going into the game, which is great. Yeah, Michigan might be the best team, I think that's safe to say, that they've played in the tournament so far. Yeah. They have a little bit more height. They're athletic. But I'm not going to take anything away from Loyola. They play like they did the other day. Listen, any team that can hit its first 13 shots in any half – boy, you got to give them all the credit in the world.
I think Loyola wins, and I think here's why, is that what we've seen is basketball is a game of momentum, and that when another team kind of throws their punch, they throw a counterpunch way harder. And so I think when you're thinking of Michigan and Loyola, both of them, to me, there's not a star player on either of those teams. I mean, you have great players, but not star guys like on the other side of the bracket with Devontae Graham and with Jalen Brunson. These are two really strong teams, and I think that from a handling adversity standpoint, as you mentioned, they play so well in late game situations. That's what you want to pay attention to, and I think that they're going to beat Michigan based on that factor.
Thanks for being here.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
We have some sad basketball news to pass along. Montini High School head boys basketball coach Daryl Thomas died today. He dropped dead of a heart attack at the age of just 52. The former McDonald's High School All-American was at St. Joseph's High School and starred on the Indiana Hoosiers 1987 National Championship team. He had 20 points in the title game against Syracuse and assisted on Keith Smart's game-winning shot with just 1 second left. He was a wonderful, wonderful man who said just recently again, Bob Knight was the toughest coach I ever played for. I'd play for him 7 days a week and twice on Sunday. It was the greatest experience of my life. He will be deeply missed. He was a wonderful guy. Daryl Thomas was just 52.
Crank up the heat and turn on STL. On NBC Sports Chicago, host David Kaplan brings his no-nonsense opinion to the table in a half hour on the topics that are trending with our teams.
We got the most mismanaged basketball team in the history of the world.
Which franchise made the gutsiest draft day move?
I think Pac wanted to do this, and he finally got his way.
Sports Talk Live, presented by the Chevy Silverado. Weeknights at 6 on NBC Sports Chicago.
Opening day is tomorrow. Well, tonight we're getting you ready for opening day with Cubs and White Sox preview shows. We'll discuss the biggest storylines on both sides of town with Cubs reports from Miami and White Sox reports from Kansas City. Cubs preview show starts at 7. White Sox preview at 8 o'clock right here on NBC Sports Chicago. And guess who the newest member of our team is? He's former Cub, first-round draft pick. He's also a professor at the University of Pennsylvania. He is our friend Doug Glanville. Welcome.
All right,
great
Cap,
to have you here, man.
It's great to be back
here. I'm glad you're here, back in town.
Absolutely.
What is a realistic level of expectation for the Chicago Cubs?
Oh, it's through the roof. I mean, you're expecting World Series. Mm-hmm. 2016 finally ends the all kinds of curses, and now 2017 was seen as sort of a setback in a way, as great as the season it still was for any team that's trying to improve upon that history. And now, you get a guy like Yu Darvish, you get these pieces added, and the expectations of sort of bouncing back and recovering. And that's
winning
again. And that's interesting to say, considering they still had a great season last year.
They did.
But this is a new day.
Well, I expect them to, I don't want to say coast through the division, but I still think they're the class of the division. And ultimately, they win the division by how many games, injuries you never know about going into a season. But there are some other good teams in major leagues. I mean, in the National League, on paper, the Dodgers are still really good.
Washington
is really good. That pitching staff is really good. And then if they get through the National League, I mean, Houston is going to be there probably, to stand in front of their way. So if the Cubs win the whole thing this year, knock on wood, then they're going to earn it, because there's still some other good teams in baseball.
Well, there was for a while a narrative that the Cubs are the most talented team in baseball. Do you still believe that to be true? Or as David alluded to, do you think the Dodgers have caught up, the Nationals, the Brewers haven't necessarily caught up, but they're coming. What David Stearns is doing to me has been impressive.
Well, you think about the Dodgers, they emptied the wallet. That's sort of where their starting point, generated this talent. Dave Roberts has done a formidable job, just the way he's sort of put the pieces together. But the Cubs, you just look at the lineup and you see a balance between experience and youth. They're very young, and yet you think of Jason Hayward and Chris Bryan and Rizzo as guys that they've been around because of the way they approach the game. And so it may be a Lester, the veterans are more on the pitching side. But to me, that's a great equalizer. It creates energy. It creates the ability of versatility, which Madden is a master at. Guys expect to come, to this team and be able to weave into different roles and different lineup slots, even different positions, and be successful. And no one better than when Chris Bryant won the MVP award.
By the way, here's our poll question. We'd love for you to vote on the Ankin Law Sports Talk Live poll question. Go to NBCSportsChicago.com/vote. Who's the Cubs' biggest threat to winning the NL pennant? The Dodgers, the Nationals, the Brewers, the Rockies, or other? I go to NBCSportsChicago.com/vote. You mentioned Chris Bryant. He dropped a trivia on me in the green room. There's only been two MVPs in the history of the sport that played how many? At least 10 games in three different positions. Chris Bryant is one in 2016.
Okay.
Who's the other? I was shocked.
I don't know.
It'd be Johnny Bench.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
He put what, first and third?
He played some outfield.
Oh, he played some outfield. Yeah. That is right.
He played left field. Yeah.
Crazy. I mean, how do you get guys at Bryant's level, Baez's level? We're talking about, guys that have star potential or are stars to buy in. Hey, Chris, I need you to play right today. Hey, Chris, I need you to go play left today. How do you get guys to buy in like that?
I mean, you have to give credit for Joe Madden. I mean, and, they talk about, well, what does a manager mean? But that's his strength. He's very good with young players. You think about Tampa, right? Once you turn 30 in Tampa, when Madden was there, they were gone, right, the pitching staff.
So traded everybody away.
They traded. But he's very familiar with this sort of caliber of player at this age group. And he when you have guys like Bryant, Baez, experienced players now in the Cubs sense, who are able to show that they're willing to take a wheelbarrow and how many gloves they need to win, then you get other younger players to buy in. And I think of Dave Martinez talking to him when he was coaching a couple of years ago. He said young players are coming into camp asking to learn new positions, which is unheard of. I mean, I know in my day, it's like, I'm a center fielder. You kind of feel like you're
that's
stuck.
What I do.
Yeah, this is what I do, but that's not the case. They're all have this will to be able to do what it takes to win. And that's something I think Joe Madden deserves a lot of credit.
I have a question for you, Doug. I think even the 27 Yankees, supposedly one of the best teams of all time, had question marks going into the season. Not that I remember that, of course. What are the questions?
Did you cover that team?
No, I wasn't. I missed it by this much. What are the question marks for the Cubs going into the season?
Well, you start with Yu Darvish. I mean, you know, this is the guy that came, you know, onto the scene in Texas. You know, this is the ace. Is he going to be able to sort of get his command, bounce back after a tough postseason, right? Mm-hmm. The game seven. And the question is whether he can be that sort of guy, the 1-2 guy. Because Lester, you know, kind of had not a Lester year. He's getting older. The questions are how he's going to sort of bounce back. And it would be nice to have three guys that you can really depend on, go with Quintana and then Chatwood. So that's sort of one of the questions I have. I'd start with the rotation of just having that sort of anchor to go with Hendricks in the bunch.
And a rotating leadoff man, which at least that for right now is the guess is what it's going to be. What kind of effect does that have, if any?
Well, you know, Hap is a guy that, you know, has been sort of declared the sort of next level. Now, what I love about Hap is he can do damage right away. I mean, you have a leadoff guy that can hit the ball out of the ballpark, put a run on the board, and that's, you know, that's something that a pitcher knows, all right, I got to be careful.
First pitch
of the game, it could be 1-0, right? So, yes, he's very aggressive. He's probably going to strike out a lot. So that's not the traditional leadoff, but this is the day we see this, right? Launch angles, hit for power, even right out of the leadoff spot. And they have so many guys in the rest of that lineup that sees a lot of pitches, that works counts, that you're not as concerned about if your leadoff guy is, you know, putting up 100 walks a year. So I think they just have a lot of versatile weapons in their lineup, and they're young and they're athletic. Even Kyle Schwarber, what does he have, like 4 stolen bases this spring training?
Crazy.
So, you know, there's a lot of options they have.
Understandably, after last season, we're talking a lot about the bats, but when the Cubs won the World Series, analytically, some think that was one of the greatest defenses of all time. Do you think to some degree Joe Maddon will tune that out a little bit and make decisions more based on defense, at least during the regular season when those sorts of analytics can be better applied than a condensed 5 or 7 game playoff series?
Well, one point I can make to that is the Cubs did not shift very much at all. I think they were last in baseball last season, even though that they had versatility, move guys around, but it wasn't as much of a priority. But yet they were very efficient by defensive run saves. Their shifts were effective. So they picked their spots, and they did a great job of choosing who to shift against. But the other thing that's evolved is we mentioned the versatility in the young players. Guys like Baez and Bryan are now more settled into the positions. So, you know, now it's that sort of next generation of whether Hap or Schwarber or guys are going to sort of weave in different ways. So they still have all these tools defensively to plug and play as they need. And that's a weapon that they can get away with because it keeps guys fresh. You know, we saw the advantage of like, all right, guys aren't blown out 162 games. He knows how to, you know, sort of give players rhythm. And I still go back to Maddon really being such a good fit for this particular structure of a team.
In terms of pace of play, John Lester was on an interview recently. He's like, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. If you like baseball, you're going to watch baseball. He said, I don't need you to cut a minute out here and 20 seconds there and tell me I can't talk to my catcher in the 8th inning of a tight ball game. Where are you on pace of play?
Well, I feel like pace of play is where it's misdirected is whenever you see pace of play, you see a timestamp of how long the game took. But it's not really about how long the game took. It's more about how the rhythm is in
the
between.
Flow.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's a flow question, right? And yeah, I don't think it's necessary to take 30 seconds in between pitches as a hitter to, like, you know, pop the chalk and do it, you know, like, all right, you know, come on now, Libby, you know. So that, I think, was, you know, you recognize when they've really drilled down, they realize they lose some time there. And so it's just a rhythm thing. Nobody complained about, you know, game 7 of the World Series with the Cubs, you know, whatever it was, 6 hours and rain delays. You know, so, you know, when you have a certain game, this is the game. And avid fans are going to stick through it, through all the trends and shifts of baseball. But, you know, it's more tightening it up. And I think that has value.
Game 5 last year, World Series, 5.5 hours, 12 to 11. Nobody complained about how entertaining that game was.
Right, absolutely. And so it is, you know, certainly the stakes matter in the postseason. People are going to stay and watch as long as they have to.
Before we let you go, Jason Hayward, this is a guy who's had John Maley. He had Barry Bonds come out and work with him. And I talked to a former manager who said, he goes, to be honest with you, it looks like he's swinging like a Nerf bat. There's no pop. What do you do with him?
got to keep working, because he certainly is a guy that is respected and puts in the time. And now, you know, Chili Davis, you have a sort of new look. See what
and
adjustments.
You like him.
I like Chili Davis. I like him a lot. I think he, first of all, a switch hitter by nature, so he can kind of work with both sides of the plate. He sort of understands that. And it seems like just watching Hayward spring training, just trying to simplify it, get to the ball a little bit more directly. You know, he had a lot of hitches and sort of robotic kind of moves to the ball. And when you have to have all that mechanics to just to get to the ball, you have to have impeccable timing. And your strength, you can get away with it for a little while. But as pitchers start making adjustments and knowing how to change speeds on you, it starts to catch up. And he feels like he has to cheat. And when you have to cheat, you start to slow yourself down. So, but, you know, he's added, obviously, a lot of different pieces, the defense, the leadership. They have so many other players that get on base and can hit for power that, you know, he's still going to be an asset. He's in the right kind of lineup that even if he's not the top performer offensively as was expected from St. Louis days, he can still be a contributing force.
Thanks for being here. We're looking forward to having you all year long with us.
All right, Cap.
You're the man.
All right, partner.
Our guy.
Whether you're on the go or stuck at work late, don't miss a second of your Chicago Blackhawks. All NBC Sports Chicago games, including pre- and post-games, can be live-streamed on the NBC Sports app. Wherever you are, you're there.
Less than 24 hours to go until baseball in Chicago officially begins for both clubs. White Sox open the 18th season in Kansas City. We'll have it for you right here on NBC Sports Chicago. James Shields gets the ball on opening day for Ricky Renteria's crew. Let's head to Kauffman Stadium. We bring in our Chuck. Chuck Garfine's there to preview the Southsiders. All right, our Chuck, going into 18, it's a markedly different scene. No Quintana, he was traded away. Obviously, they've made a lot of moves. What's your level of expectation, and where do you see this team headed going into 18?
You know, I think it's all signs are pointing up. How directly up we're talking about in 2018, that really remains to be seen. But what I can say is there's a great vibe here. There is talent here in the major league level and certainly a lot of talent in the minor league level. How it's all going to come together and equate to a winning season potentially here in 2018, I don't know. It's baseball. You never know what is going to happen. But Rick Renteria was just talking here a short time ago, and he basically was saying he's trying to like have a little fun with us in the media, saying you guys like this team. You don't want to come out and say it, but you like it. You see what's going on here, and there is something special happening here with this team. But they looked really good in the spring. They got to put it together here on the major league level in the regular season, and we'll see what happens. But I'm feeling optimistic about them. But is it going to mean a winning season in 2018? I'm not ready to go there yet, but we'll see how things play out here this season, and it all starts here tomorrow.
Archuk, last year at this time, the first question was, well, when are you trading Quintana? Then there were questions, are you going to trade Abreu? Are you going to trade Avi Garcia, who had that breakout year? Are you going to move James Shields? Are you going to move David Robertson? Are you going to move Tommy Kahnle? And we saw all these moves. Are they in the talent acquisition mode now, or are there still more deals Rick might make during the season that might suppress the record some?
You know, nothing like last year. That's not going to happen. They might flip some of these bullpen arms. Avi Garcia is a possibility to flip him, but you know, it doesn't seem like there's going to be a team in the middle of the season that's going to say, we need Avi Garcia, and we're going to give you this great prospect in return. So I think the only thing they're potentially going to flip would be maybe you do Miguel Gonzalez again, which would be kind of funny if that happened 2 years in a row. I just don't see that really happening. This season's more about development. We've got our guys. That's what they're thinking for now and the future. Let's see what we can do with them. So I think there might be a small trade here or there, but I don't see any big trades happening with this team during the season.
Chuck, there's some guys down in the minors, Michael Kopech, Eloy Jimenez, just to name a couple. We saw on the north side that Chris Bryant didn't break camp with the team, but he was up quickly. How quick do you think Rick Hahn, Rick Renteria, Kenny Williams say, you know what? We're going to our bullets.
It's funny. I don't think they're going to use the word quick with anything with this rebuild. They haven't yet. That being said, I could see a Michael Kopech, if he comes into the start of the season in Charlotte and he's dominating there, a quicker call-up might happen with him. Maybe we're talking June, potentially, for him, or if there's an injury that happens with the rotation. But he still has to prove it at AAA. There are boxes that need to be checked for him to come up here. Same with Eloy Jimenez. So, and Jimenez is starting in AA. There's going to be nothing quick about this rebuild whatsoever. You saw with the Cubs, they were very patient, and basically the same kind of textbook is going on with the White Sox with their rebuild and their young guys.
All right, how about the matchup with the Royals to get things started? James Shields, a veteran, he will be on the hill. What are you expecting out of James as a veteran guy? There's no Carlos Rodon right now due to injury.
First off, I'll tell you about what to expect for tomorrow. It is raining here right now. It's going to be 54 degrees and cloudy tomorrow, so it won't be a problem for the game. Might be snowing here on Sunday. That's in the forecast, so it could be an interesting weather weekend for the White Sox and the Royals. As for tomorrow, James Shields, you know, he's pitching some big games in this park when he was younger, and, you know, it's tough to say what he's due. You know, he had some moments. He started off last year, last April, he had an ERA of, like, I think it was in the ones after three starts, and then he got hurt. So he could come out here and pitch really well, but the key for him is sustaining that success, and he's worked on some adjustments with his arm angle, throwing a little more sidearm. And this is not the same kind of Royals team we've seen in the past. No Eric Hosmer, no Lorenzo Cain. They've moved on. So I would like to see Shields have a good game here on opening day. And I've already predicted it once. I'll do it again. I think Matt Davidson hits a home run and the Sox win this game. And Shields has a good outing for the White Sox. Mark it down.
How about that? All right, last one. At the end of the season, is Lucas Giolito the best pitcher on the Sox roster at the end of 18?
Where we sit here right, where we sit here right now, I'll go yes, he will be. But if they bring up Michael Kopech, he might be better than Giolito. But I'll say right now as we sit here, Giolito is number one. And by the way, he'll be on our pregame show tomorrow around 2 o'clock. So look forward to that.
Chuck, dodge the raindrops, kid. Enjoy the opening of the season. Yeah. It's the best time.
I'm going inside. Talk to you later, Cap.
All right, so here's the question. How many wins for the White Sox this season? Now you can vote on our Ankin Law Sports Talk Live poll question on the Sox. Go to NBCSportsChicago.com/vote. There you go. Less than 60, 60 to 70, 71 to 80, 81 plus. How do you vote, buddy?
I don't know. I'm in the 70-ish camp. Mm-hmm. I think you said the over-under was, what, 60?
66 and a half.
I think that's a tough one to call just because of the nature of this rebuild. It was built through pitching. So, in theory, if that pitching comes up, those guys keep you in some ball games, you're winning 2-1, 3-2. That could kind of screw things up. It's different than the Cubs rebuild in that sense. Cubs was a little bit easier to handicap in terms of the gambling.
Well, first of all those people who said less than 60, that's 100-plus losses, and I don't think this team's going to lose 100-plus games.
I don't see that.
They're not going to win the division. That goes without saying. I've seen some people who've gone as high as in the low 80s. That's not going to happen either, but I'll probably say low 70s. So, you know, the division isn't that good.
I tweeted out all my baseball picks today. Took a beating because I have bad handwriting, but I had them 72 and 90, I believe I was.
Sounds right.
That's, I think somewhere in that 70 to 75 range sounds about right to me.
But I'm still excited for, you know, for them and the fan
because
base.
Because I think their rebuild, if you're a Sox fan, my brother's a diehard. He goes, we're going this way. Not there yet, but it's going that way. I got to think if you're a diehard Sox fan, you're excited for baseball tomorrow.
I am excited for the White Sox near and far future. I mean, let's face it, we all know the names. Unfortunately, they've had some injuries to some of these players. And as we all know, no matter how many prospects you have, they're not all going to pan out anyway. Right. But I think the top-of-the-line ones that we all know, Kopech and Jimenez, I don't question at all that both of them are going to be stars, barring injury. And I'm looking forward to seeing both of them.
But we do know what the scouts are saying, and that's our best guess, right? And as many of those top 100 guys as you can compile, that increases your chances down the road. And I think the job Rick Hahn has done is phenomenal. And it starts with what he was able to leverage in that Chris Sale trade, what he was able to leverage in that Adam Eaton trade.
How about Quintana trade?
Yeah, that too. I mean, look, they got a great player in Jimenez. So I think, to me, he's really elevated his game, and he really needs to be considered one of the real solid GMs in the game. I think he's done a fantastic job.
Thanks for listening to the Sports Talk Live podcast. Remember to watch the show weekdays on CSN and visit csnchicago.com for previous episodes of the podcast and all the latest sports news and highlights.